We made this.
The Marvel Universe podcast on the We Made This podcast network. My name is Kurt North, returning back into the hosting chair to talk about Hawkeye, Season 1, Episode 4, Partners, Am I Right? Joining me on this discussion is Dan Owen. Dan, welcome back to the show. How are things?
Great, thank you very much. Yeah, good to be back. I didn't think I'd be back this soon, but I've kind of swung in to save the day, I think, because somebody was sick, so I'm back again.
Yeah, so you've obviously given your opinion on the show, but things have moved on slightly. How do you think Hawkeye's faring in these last couple of episodes?
I'm really enjoying it. You know, I was a bit disappointed that I wasn't doing the third episode. That was definitely the best of the four so far. So I only did the first two and this one, so I've missed out on my favourite. But I really enjoyed episode three in particular, but even this one that we're going to discuss today, episode four, was a good episode. Probably the worst of the four, if I'm honest, but I think the standard's so high with this series, in my opinion, then it's just still a perfectly entertaining, you know, interesting episode of television. So I'm really enjoying Hawkeye, and I think actually it's probably already my favourite. And unless it goes drastically wrong in the last two episodes, I think this is going to be my favourite of the MCU shows that we've had so far this year.
All right, okay, that's good to know. For me, I mean, obviously this is my first appearance on Hawkeye, and I'm going to give some blasphemy here. I'm suffering from what I call Marvel fatigue. It happened to me around Ant-Man, when Ant-Man first came out, that I didn't actually watch Ant-Man. And I hate to say it, I haven't watched it yet. So I need to get into that. And I'm sure it's a perfectly great movie, but it's just for some reason around that time, I got really tired of Marvel. And I'm in that bit of lull at the moment. And Hawkeye has actually brought me back around, which I think is fantastic. I think I haven't seen Shang-Chi and I haven't seen Eternals yet. I am looking forward to Spider-Man, even though Spider-Man is my least favourite Marvel character ever, kind of thing. But I'm actually looking forward to seeing what they do with that. But with regards to Hawkeye, I've really enjoyed these episodes. And even though I would still say WandaVision was still my favourite TV show, this is going to really challenge for the second spot, I think. It's what I find, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in this episode, is that I love the juxtaposition. I love quite melancholy stuff anyway, so I'm really kind of connecting with Hawkeye and Jeremy Renner's character at the moment. I think some of the, especially in this episode, I think there's some marvellous scenes and some thoughts to have. But I also, I'm actually enjoying some of the more frivolous and some of the, light-hearted things with it. And I think the Christmas setting has been really interesting. So you'd say this is probably your least favourite. I mean, would you still, if you were giving it out of 10, say for just as looking at it as a Marvel show, do you still see it as a really good episode of television, though?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still going to give this sort of, I know we do ratings out of 10, don't we, on this podcast. So I'd still give it like a strong 7, which I think was what I gave episode 2, to be honest. So it's kind of on par with that, really. But yeah, I think the first two episodes were really interesting because it's obviously all brand new to you, new characters, new setup. You don't know where, you know, what's going to happen, so it's all kind of fresh. Yeah. So it kind of benefits from that. And the third episode really capitalised on the first two episodes and was kind of more action-focused and really good banter and interplay and that kind of thing. And a lot more kind of visual effects as well came in. So that was easily the best, I think. But this one is a bit of a transitionary episode, isn't it, really? We're kind of into the second half now of the season already. this is kind of taking stock of things a little bit more and kind of just adjusting things and moving us to the to the second half of the story. So yeah, and you tend to find that in television, don't you? But so I quite enjoyed this. This was kind of more of a character focused episode, wasn't it? And yeah, so like the third episode was kind of character based, but in terms of Clint and Kate kind of working together and like actually involved in a mission and all the kind of fun and camaraderie of that. But this was more of them kind of connecting as people. So yeah, and I really enjoyed that for different reasons. But so even though I say it's like the worst of the four, you know, I just mean it's the least favourite of the four, really. Yeah. I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I would absolutely agree. I think if we're just talking briefly about episode three, the things that really stood out to me, and I think that the character pieces are kind of what's jumping out at me on this show, is the telephone call that Hawkeye had, Kate was kind of writing down all of what the son was saying. I thought that was really, really, really good, and I really enjoyed that. Yeah. And a lot of the emotional beats in this episode is what really got me for the show. So without further ado, shall we delve a little bit deeper into this episode and see where we take from there? Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Right. Okay. So as we've been getting previously on Hawkeye. We're going straight into it, and a couple of things I just wanted to mention in the previously was the fact that we get obviously just the general kind of things, but things like when Kate was in the Bishop security archive, that she only got locked out when she was searching for Jack, and I found that quite interesting. What are your thoughts on Eleanor and Jack as characters? Because obviously they focus a lot in this first part of this episode. What are you making of those two characters, and do you see any curveballs potentially coming in?
I discussed this a little bit in my first two episodes with Tony, you know, now we're kind of halfway through. Have my thoughts changed? Not really. I still think, you know, they're being treated in a certain way on these two characters. There's something off, definitely.
Yeah.
And obviously with Jack this episode, we do find out that he's definitely, you know, a bad person to an extent. Although I still think there's an element here where we're being led to believe he's a particularly bad person and a villain, but I don't think maybe he's quite as bad as we're expecting him to be. I don't think he's like the big like puppet master behind anything here. But we find out, don't we, that he's the CEO of Sloan Limited, which is like a shell corporation that's laundering money for the Tracksuit Mafia. So he's kind of involved, but, you know, as somebody who's watched a lot of Breaking Bad and stuff, you know, you can be somebody who's kind of involved to that extent, but it doesn't mean that you're getting your hands dirty and you know, and that kind of thing. You're just kind of like maybe making a bit of money on the side through some dodgy dealings kind of thing. So I don't know about him. I think he's a bit of a red herring. So I think really it's all going to be about Eleanor, Kate's mum. I think she's really going to be... I think she's going to be the big baddie, to be honest, as a big kind of reveal at the end. And because you don't really get Vera Farmiga, do you, to be in a show like this and just have her play the mum. It's what I said the first week of this podcast, and I still kind of hold with that, really. I don't think she'd be playing this kind of character unless there's something juicy that's going to come along. Maybe setting up for season two, where she'll be a bigger villain next time or something.
Yeah, because it seems to me, I mean, just on this episode alone, you know, as I say, the fact that it was only when Kate started to search for Jack that the Bishop security net kind of fell down. And there's just, and obviously speaking to the uncle and just wondering what was actually occurring there, there's just those little bits of, you know, least little pieces spread out for the episode. And I would agree. I definitely feel that there's something more towards Eleanor. But these scenes in the house is interesting. I mean, obviously having an Avenger in your house is obviously something quite quite unique for a lot of people. You mentioned about Breaking Bad with Jack. I mean, I have the same thing with him. I was like, Salamanca, I can't get that out of my head. which I think will play up to that character trait, because, you know, Breaking Bad was such a big TV show that anyone who has that kind of... already have that in the back of their heads might bring that to the table when they're watching this kind of show. But the dining table scene and later on with the, you know, there's a bit, this is more of an interrogation scene here with both Clint and Kate. But I did like the CB1 stuff. I thought I did howl at that. I thought that was brilliant. And just the kind of like the interplay, but this comes in more, doesn't it? Because it's basically the episode's called Partners, Am I Right? But, you know, right through this course of this episode, it starts off with this, are they partners, are they not? Moves into, like, you know, acceptance of that. But then, you know, we'll get there towards the end of the episode. But then there's a big twist in the way that Hawkeye is reacting as well. So from a narrative point of view, I think this story works really well with as a self-contained story of their character arc, where they are. But what did you make to the first couple of bits about the, you know, the kind of the interplay with the CB1 stuff and friends? And, you know, Kate does allude to that quite a few times when she's with the, you know, the what they're called, the Laurels, is that what they're called? LARPers.
Oh, the LARPers,
The LARPers later on, where she's like, I'm a friend of Hawkeye. So it is playing up to that, and I do like that aspect of it.
Yeah, I liked the scene where they were all together in the house, having a bit of a chat, you know, with Jack calling Hawkeye Archer, getting that wrong. So yeah, it was quite good. The real takeaway from that scene for me was Eleanor kind of pulling Clint to one side at the end and just kind of reminding him that her daughter isn't a superhero, and, you know, look at what happened to her Black Widow, and, you know, just reminding him that this maybe isn't a life for a young woman like her. But strangely, though, he didn't really take any heed of that, did he? So I was expecting him to kind of immediately pour cold water on Kate's kind of excitement about being involved with him as his partner, but he kind of just continued as he was originally, really, didn't he? And it wasn't until the end of the episode that he kind of started to think maybe Eleanor's correct and it's best to leave Kate behind. So it's a bit strange. Maybe that scene could have been adjusted somehow for that scene with Eleanor to come in towards the end, maybe. Or, I don't know, it seemed a bit odd to me, but I did like that interaction.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the reason the reason for that scene is to because right through all of the acts that there's the hint of Natasha, because she uses the very name Natasha in that scene. So I think it's more to highlight the fact that, you know, that's going to be central, because as soon as she said that, I thought, this is going to go somewhere interesting. You know, and Natasha comes up a couple of times in this episode. So I think it is just a way of threading those breadcrumbs throughout the episode of having that reaction. And you know, from a narrative Eleanor point of view, that maybe she's using that to try and keep her daughter away, if she is the big bad, or if there is something not quite right with Eleanor, trying to push him away, and using Natasha is a hot word for Hawkeye. So I can see it from that perspective.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that. Yeah, so yeah, now she knows she's got like an Avenger involved in her business, or very close to her. She's maybe a bit unnerved by that, but trying to keep a cool head. And yeah, that's a good point, really. I didn't really think about that. But yeah, so she could be just trying to push Hawkeye to one side by pretending that she cares about her daughter. Really, it's all about just kind of keeping him away from her business, maybe, because she knows he's going to stumble upon what she's up to, possibly.
Just thinking about that as well, when she says an Avenger-level event. Yeah, so if she is the big bad, the fact that she's going, you can't be investigating an Avenger-level event, you know, so it could be the fact she's really surprised to see an Avenger there. So that would be really interesting if that's the way they're going.
So I was also going to say, I always like a scene I kind of tie together with this one, where Kate is just with her mother and Jack, that scene when they're just them, those three. I like that scene as well. That came soon after this scene, didn't it, I think?
It did.
And that was really good as well. I liked that because I liked the way that Kate was beginning to see that her mum and Jack have some good sexual chemistry together, and she's never really seen her mum in that way before, you know, and she was smiling a bit more and beginning to maybe think, maybe Jack's not such a bad guy after all. He seems to make my mum happy, which is ultimately what she wants. So I liked that. But then it was kind of immediately undercut, wasn't it, with Clint realising that Jack is involved somehow with the tracksuit mafia. So I was a little bit surprised that once he told Kate about that, she didn't seem particularly... I don't know. I think her reaction was quite muted to me, because I thought she'd have a bigger reaction to that, because it's either vindicating what she's long thought, that Jack's a villain, but she didn't seem very excited that she's got proof thanks to Hawkeye, and neither did she seem disappointed that she's just beginning to come around to liking Jack, nor all of a sudden she's been given proof that he is a baddie. So I didn't quite understand the reaction there, with Kate, but
I would agree with what you said there. I think for me, that I think the smiley Kate when they're dancing and stuff like that kind of gives you that homely feel, that, and I think that that's more of a thematic kind of push for making you have those feels for obviously the next scene that comes after that, when, you know, they're talking about playing board games and stuff like that, and then she's realizing that you know, Hawkeye's all on his own kind of thing. So there's an element of that. I also think that, as I say, with Jack maybe not being, you know, is he a patsy of some sort? Is he actually bad at all? You know, there's maybe a level of degrees about how much he knows and how much he doesn't. But he does say that there is, you know, he does work him down to the bone and stuff like that. So there is that. There is that element, which I find quite fascinating. So maybe it'd be varying degrees. I can't see him being completely innocent. So I don't really see that, but I can see it being like he's just, you know, he's quite an aggressive maybe CEO that wants, you know, the things that he wants, obviously likes of the swords and stuff like that. He's quite more of a collector kind of thing, which
well, I think he did kill his brother, though, didn't he, in the first episode? I think we're being led to believe that he did that. And there's been no other kind of suspects, has there, really? I mean, maybe you could say that Maya Lopez maybe did that, Echo, that character. But I think we're supposed to still assume that Jack did that. So maybe his brother found out something that he didn't want him to find out, or he was pushed into killing his brother for some reason.
Yeah, potentially.
So maybe he's got blood on his hands to that extent. So he is I think he is a villain, but I just don't think he's like the big villain. That's the thing, really.
Yeah.
But also, I was a bit surprised that once Kate finds out from Hawkeye that Jack is involved with the Tracksuit Mafia, why doesn't she go and tell her mum? I didn't quite understand that either, why she doesn't just go straight round to her mum's house and say, oh, look, I've got proof here that your boyfriend or your fiancé is, laundering money for the Tracksuit Mafia. I don't understand why that didn't happen. But maybe that's going to happen next episode. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think in other stories you might have, because it's like in the Bishop Security Archive that they've found that and it's been shut down, you'd have more of a, like, well, what does my mum know kind of thing? But then I suppose it'd be slightly different then, because then it would be like, you know, can I trust my mother kind of thing? And I don't know if they're willing to go down that route just yet. So, but that would be interesting just to see if that was the case. But yeah, let's talk about just briefly about the idea then that, you know, as I said there, where we get that homely feeling of like, oh, isn't it nice to be together? And Jack's always miscommunicating the way he comes across with like saying heart growing old and stuff like that, which is something that I would do if I'm being absolutely honest with you. I tend to get things the wrong way around, but I thought that was a nice character trait for Jack actually.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe he's putting that on. I don't know, to come across as vulnerable and nice and funny. I don't know. it was a nice little bit of character detail, I suppose, yeah. And, I really like Tony Dalton in the role as well. We've mentioned Breaking Bad a few times, but he actually is in Better Call Saul, isn't he? So, there's a connection there. But so he's really good, an actor, and this is more of a light-hearted role for him. So, yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying him in this role. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and it's a nice solid role, isn't it? It's not, you know, there's at the moment it's just plain quite level. You know, we've had the sword scenes and all that type of thing, but it's kind of like just playing it nice and percolating. I think it's probably the word I would say. It's percolating quite nicely for his character.
A little bit of comic book knowledge coming in here, but I'm not a big comic book reader or anything. But you know, as I keep on saying on these podcasts, everyone does a little bit of Googling, don't they? So you do a little bit of Googling into the Marvel back catalogues. And so, Jack in the comics is a superhero called the Swordsman.
Right.
So I think he's a hero anyway. I think he trains up Hawkeye or something in the comics. But so he is kind of, so maybe they're kind of setting him up for that. So maybe he's going to have, you know, more of a bigger role going forward. I think the Swordsman's a good guy, I think. So maybe we're just being led to believe he's dodgy, but he's actually okay, you know, and we'll see him become this Swordsman character, possibly. I don't know.
That would be interesting. One thing, just while we're talking about that, actually, is that I'm not a comic book guy. The only comic book, I think I've mentioned this on this podcast before, in some ilk, it would have been another TV show, I think, that the only comic books I've actually read is The Walking Dead. So it would have been What If, is when I mentioned that. So So stuff like that is intriguing. And I think for Hawkeye especially, and especially what comes later, is going into a TV show like this fresh is actually really nice. You know, that things like WandaVision, when I know that the original Wanda costume in Halloween and stuff like that was great, and, you know, there's a slightly different take on Wanda. But not really knowing too much is really good. I mean, the fact as well that I've kind of been away from Marvel to a degree, the reveal towards the end, I completely forgot. I've obviously seen I've seen the end of Black Widow, so and the end credits, and I completely forgot. So that worked in my favour there. But yeah, getting back to Kate and Hawkeye, this is the kind of scene the scenes that I really really enjoyed in Hawkeye so far. That Kate has realised, you know, it's gone from looking at your hero to trying to be the best friend, but also kind of like realizing he's a really hurt character, you know, and damaged, and he's damaged. He's obviously suffering PTSD and stuff like that. And she brings the DVDs, actually, not streaming. I was waiting for them to like select Disney Plus. I think that might be a step too far, but but what did you make to these scenes with Kate's like realization that she needs to go and like see Hawkeye, but the actual content within these scenes.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Really, this is probably the highlight of the episode, wasn't it? The scene with them together. It was in Clint's apartment, wasn't it? I think. Is it Clint's apartment? Yeah.
Is it not the aunties?
No,
is it not Kate's aunties?
Oh, was it? Okay.
I'm not 100% sure myself, to be honest, but I thought it was Kate's auntie's house, but I might be wrong. I might be wrong.
I don't know, for some reason I had it in my head there, it was like Hawkeye's flat, essentially. But anyway, so they have a evening in, don't they, really, watching Christmas films. And you always get a nice little shot there, don't you, of It's a Wonderful Life on the telly. It always happens in every single film that you ever watch.
Well, I actually think this is really pertinent to the actual scenes that they do, because Hawkeye talks about the shot that he didn't take, and that's also about, obviously, not shooting Natasha. And like The Wonderful Life is all about the road not taken, so I found that thematically really quite good that they've actually linked those two together.
Yeah, that's really good, and it's just a nice little moment for them to connect, wasn't it? And to sort of for Kate to sort of see, as you say, a lot of the pain that Hawkeye's gone through and some of his regrets and things. And also, I was quite surprised that they just revealed that he was Ronin. I thought that'd be a big moment. I thought they were going to keep that back for like the end of episode 5 or something, as a big moment that would make Kate question who Clint is. But again, you know, strange. This episode, more think about it, had a lot of strange reactions from Kate, in my opinion, because I thought as soon as she'd realised or worked out that he was Ronin, I thought she'd be a bit upset about that, or, you know, that her kind of childhood hero is a vigilante. And I know he goes around and he only killed bad people, but still, you know, Ronin was not seen as a good person, was he, in the eyes of the press? No. And things. So I don't know. Again, you know, Kate's reaction to that was very kind of like, oh, yeah, I think I worked out you're the Ronin, and we kind of just move on from that. And so that was a strange decision from a storytelling point of view, for me anyway, because I thought that'd be a big moment towards the end where she begins to like doubt him and think, oh, maybe he's a bad person and this kind of thing. But didn't get any of that, which is strange.
Yeah, well, I think for me, I would take a different approach with that, because I think that Hawkeye, by its nature of the show, that the way that they're playing it up is that, you know, Hawkeye's not really seen it. Kate talks about the branding of Hawkeye during the course of the last few episodes, that, you know, he's not the hero. He thinks he's not the hero that everyone thinks he should be because of what he's become from Ronin and the like. But, you know, he doesn't almost feel worthy of that. He feels like he's a very grounded character. He is human. He's having to wear the ice packs and, you know, the hearing loss and stuff like that, which he's had to deal with. And I think the downplaying of it, that it's almost like, sort of, for me, attesting to Kate being more of a case of like feeling empathy for him, you know, like kind of understanding that he lost his family in the blip, that she's kind of like understanding where that might have come from, rather than actually being the big reveal. It's more a case of, yeah, you've gone through hard times. I can see you struggling. I can see you suffering. And that was the way you took it. And I didn't take it the way you took it, which is interesting in itself, really.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that she obviously understands what losing somebody's like. She's lost her father and things. So, she's obviously got that connection. And yeah, I agree that she can sort of empathise with what he's gone through. But I don't know. I mean, we don't really know too much, really, do we, about what the Ronin was, in a sense. I mean, we have the scene in Endgame, which is just one scene, where he just kills a Japanese Yakuza in the street. And you get a few shots or a scene in the previous episode of him killing Maya's dad. So you've seen a few things, but I don't know. I think maybe we don't know too much about Ronin, so maybe her reaction is understandable. But I've always had it in my head that Ronin's some kind of like really bad dude who like really who like really put a lot of fear into people on the streets, because they perhaps, I don't know, even though he was definitely killing bad people, it's still not a good thing to have a guy running around in a costume doing that kind of thing. So I just thought her reaction would be stronger, but she just seemed very, to me anyway, it just seemed like she just kind of brushed it off a little bit and was like, oh, you're the Ronin, and just kind of like, for me anyway, just fizzled a little bit. I understand what you're saying, though. Maybe I've just taken it wrong, you know.
Maybe because I'm not really identifying with Ronin as a character in that way. I think, obviously, the vigilante stuff, you're right, obviously, he was renowned, and you mentioned, obviously, the Endgame scenes. What I found quite interesting, though, is the kind of the conversation that he has, and this links in with the Ronin thing, that he says that, I think the line was something along the lines of, let's see if we've got it on here. I was the whip. So he was basically saying he was the blunt end of the stick. He was the weapon. And it was basically, he realised that Natasha needed to get out, and that's why he didn't. And obviously that mirrors the scene later on with what happens with Elena later. There's a mirror on that scene, which obviously works quite well. But then Ronin was like, it was like the family is his tether. And, you know, Kate pushes that, and, you know, just for the audience sake, as much as anything, that, you know, without that tether, and I think it maybe links in a little bit with his wife as well, because his wife seems to be the one that kind of points him in the right direction, especially in this episode. So I find it, you know, it's interesting that he seems to be lost without anybody who's like, you know, whether it's the Avengers, whether it's the, you know, whatever he may be doing with Ronin, because he's got nothing there. And he needs to have that purpose, and he just doesn't seem to have that purpose in Ronin, which for me, I find that really intriguing that he said, you know, and he kind of surmises that with saying that he's that weapon, he's that whip, and you know, I really enjoy that aspect of it, that you know, he's been so melancholy and so downbeat and, you know, really kind of run down, because it's almost like he doesn't have a cause. And I find that fascinating in this show's run, that they really are delving into the, you know, the harshness of like maybe going to wars or stuff like that with his hearing loss, and, you know, the culmination of all the stuff that's happened there, that, you know, and the loss of his family and stuff like that. And I just love the way that Hawkeye is portrayed in these episodes.
Yeah, and obviously Ronin means a samurai without a master, doesn't it? So
it does. I don't know. I didn't know that from the X-Files, by any chance.
All right.
There's an episode called Pusher, and he calls himself a Ronin. So, and it's Tony Black's favourite X-File episode. So I managed to get that on a Podcast 616 Network thing. So our esteemed leader is one of his favourite episodes, and it's called Pusher, and he calls himself Ronin. So.
So I'm just going to make the connection there. Obviously, he hasn't lost a master, but he's lost his family. So it's always been a nice little, you know, the naming of Ronin kind of made sense. But yeah, I mean, Hawkeye, just in his normal duties with S.H.I.E.L.D., has always been like a weapon, you know, somebody goes out and is a professional killer, essentially. So the only difference with Ronin was he was, I suppose, just rogue, wasn't he? He was just a bit, you know, doing his own thing. He wasn't being controlled by Nick Fury or anything like that. And he didn't have his family to ground him. So he just, you know, just out and, you know, doing what he wants to. But obviously targeting villains. So I don't know. I just think we just needed a bit more, really, with what Ronin was all about. You know, I'm surprised we haven't really had an episode, like a flashback to Ronin a bit more, just to fill in some gaps, maybe.
Well, like a Stranger Things go to New York kind of episode.
Yeah. Well, one of my issues with Hawkeye, which we might get to a bit, in a bit more detail towards the end, is just the length that it's taking, because it's only six episodes, and I'm increasingly thinking to myself that I think it needs eight, really.
Right.
Having like a proper Ronin flashback episode, I think would be useful to have. And there's a few other kind of areas where I think they needed a bit more time to really expand it and to give you a bit of extra depth there. So it's just a bit strange to me that it's only six episodes, because it's going to be, very quickly it's going to be over, isn't it? End of 2 weeks' time. Yeah. And they have to get a real move on, because there's quite a lot to cover now. There's a lot of things in play. So I've got a feeling that episode 5 and 6 is going to be similar to the first two episodes, almost like a two-parter. This is going to be like breakneck pace to wrap everything up. And I think really Hawkeye would have benefited from being, a few episodes longer, in my opinion.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they wrap up the season, actually, because, Marvel have that thing of like going big, don't they? And this show seems to be going it's actually going more smaller. It's actually focusing more on the emotional aspect. So far, anyway. Yeah, you've got all the fight scenes, you've got all the comedy bits, you've got the kind of the 80s kind of, kind of running about kind of film aspect to it. It's based around Christmas and stuff like that. So it has those elements to it, but it does seem to be focusing quite significantly on both Kate and Hawkeye's kind of like, Clint's kind of like sort of, emotional resonance about where they're coming from. It's like it's almost like she mentioned CB1, doesn't she? So this almost is like the Padawan kind of thing. It's like him teaching her, which I find fascinating. I mean, the next scene is the perfect example of how they approach things differently. I mean, Kate, I think we'll talk about this now, but Kate seems to approach things from a much different perspective than Hawkeye does, because she goes to the LARPers and is sent to the LARPers by Clint. And when she gets there, she kind of like sort of says, as I mentioned before, I've been sent by, Hawkeye, he's my best friend kind of thing. And she brings him back to that apartment. And the fact that, he's then, I sent you to get the arrowheads or the arrow stuffs. And she's just seen an opportunity to make connections with people where he just wants to get the job done. And this happens time and time again. I mean, we'll talk about this towards the back end of the episode when we get to the final scenes. But for Kate's perspective, I think it would be good to talk about how she is very kind of has that empathy, that kind of, the bewilderment of the world, and actually speaks to people like that guy in the elevator and the LARPers. I think he doesn't want to speak to anyone. And I find that really good.
Yeah, she's basically a different version of him, isn't she? Really, she's a female. She's not to be too stereotypical, but usually women have got more empathy than men, generally speaking. And being younger and stuff, she's not so kind of hasn't got the weight on her shoulders yet, as she of the world. And she's just a lot fresher and younger. And I remember being like that as well. 20 years ago. But you just naturally get older and you get a bit more cynical, I suppose. Hawkeye's the kind of character's at the end of his career and in that kind of thing. And she's just she's wanting to start this life. She's got all that enthusiasm and stuff. So, she's just naturally a different kind of person. Like I say, she makes more connections to people. She's more interested in people and that kind of thing. I'm still not a fan of the LARPers, I must say. So when they came back in this episode, I was like, oh, God. This is one of the few things I didn't like about the first episode, or the second episode. I'm not too much a fan. I've heard that in the comics, the LARPers are not in the comics at all.
Okay. But the way they did it, the fire brigade, like when the sticker on the fire brigade, it was like, as someone who doesn't read comics, I went, am I supposed to know something about them? So
yeah, it was strange.
Quite surprising.
I've heard somebody tell me that, like I said, LARPers are not in the comics, but there's like neighbors or something. There's lots of neighbors, quirky neighbors and stuff that Hawkeye and Kate interact with. So I think they're replacing what the neighbors were doing in the comics. But you can kind of tell anyway that the LARPers are like an invention of the TV show, because it just seems to be a bit random to me. I don't quite get what's going on there. And because they've come back, I'm like, oh, maybe there's something to be taken more seriously. I just thought they were a bit of a throwaway comic relief kind of moment in episode two. But they're back again. So I don't know what's going to happen there. Maybe they're going to be part of a a big team or something and help out towards the end. Right. I don't know, with their skills, if they've got any.
Yeah, I suppose, well, yeah, they haven't got, that's, I think that's the point, is that they haven't got any skills, but they are fire brigade, they are people from the fire brigade, the police.
Yeah.
And I think it's narratively, they've been used for that reason. It's very much like, we need to get the arrows back from A to B. But then again, did it really need to be a story element? You know, do you need to like be talking about this stuff? Because it's never been mentioned before in all the other Avengers movies that I'm aware of.
No.
That, you know, that he loses his arrows and then has to get them back. I don't think he has, anyway.
Well, that's the strange thing about Hawkeye, isn't it? Is that like you say, it's really good in the sense that it focuses on the characters. But in terms of plot, you're basically just following these characters around getting different objects. Like, well, first of all, we're after the Ronin suit. Now we're after the arrows and the trick arrows and things. And now, you know, towards the end, we're after the Rolex watch. That becomes a big thing. And it seems to be just like a case of just they're just after little items along the way. So in terms of like a story, if you had to criticize Hawkeye, I suppose, sometimes it's strength and also there's a downside to that, because it's really good at the character stuff, but I don't think there's really much of a story here, really. I don't know, I'm getting the feeling, but I'm okay with that, because I do like something that works on a different level sometimes. I don't want to be too burdened with plot sometimes. A lot of other Marvel stuff, especially some of the films, and Eternals definitely throws a lot of mythology at you and stuff if you're to sort of have to research and think about and this kind of thing. So I do like how Hawkeye's quite refreshing. It's quite simple. But, there is an argument to be made, I think, that it's very kind of just A to B, isn't it? Just trying to get things.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like, as you say, it's that kind of buddy movie type thing, isn't it? It's kind of it's using the characters for what they are. They're very kind of mirror opposites of themselves. And going back to that, actually, as well as the character, I talked about the empathy, but you know, you look at the way that I would say that she has empathy, but then you look on Hawkeye's perspective, that he's the one going, right, I've been trained and drilled, I know how to get into a building, what my exit points are. I know I'm jumping a little bit, we'll come back to it eventually, but when he says, like, sort of, you need to think about the exit strategy before your entry strategy and how to get into the building, he's talking tactically constantly. And then, you know, as she's going into that building, she's reacting spontaneously and actually taking the opportune moments to do stuff. And there's downfalls with both versions. But I do like that the characters are quite wide apart from that perspective, you know, and her fighting skills aren't as good. And, you know, just the way that they play that overall in all the seasons, all the episodes so far, that, you know, you're seeing someone who is older, he's struggling a little bit with his fighting, but he knows what he's doing, he's very accomplished. And you've got someone like K2, has some skills, but hasn't been refined enough. And the fact that she is a bit of a rough edge, the emotional aspect plays out. But actually, from that tactical point of view, it's like, that's not what we should be doing. We shouldn't be doing it this way, because that's not the way I've been trained. And again, using that weapon analogy.
Yeah, I mean, I really love the relationship between them both. And I think whenever Clinton and Kate are on screen, whatever you think about the plot and things, it just all fades away. I just really like watching Hawkeye and Kate. It's one of those shows, isn't it? I think that's what everyone's responding to, is that you just like those characters. You know, it's like with buddy cop comedies and things, you know, of the 80s, you know. if you just like the two people involved, that covers a lot of sins, doesn't it? You just want to you know, Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte or whatever, you know, Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. You just want to see those two actors together. And the same thing with this, really. I think it just benefits such a lot from Jeremy Renner and Hayley Steinfeld. This works so well together.
Yeah, or slightly different tact, Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson. And speaking of vengeance, look, see what I did there. Maya's obviously after some vengeance, so we do get some of the tracksuit stuff here with Clint going to see the guy in the car. And again, you know, they've been a bit of comic relief. I think they are a bit too cartoonish for me, if I'm being honest, of what I've seen so far. It's been a bit too much. And again, because we haven't mentioned it in the previous discussion, things like what's really frustrated me a little bit with this show, and it's just the unrealisticness of certain elements, like the way that he was shooting his arrow when he was getting out of the scene where he managed to shoot the arrow right through the duct tape. And like he did a move where he shot someone's hand behind him, and the coin little toss thing that they were being taught, I was just a bit like, oh, I don't know. It makes it too unrealistic for me, especially for a show that's like quite it's been quite grounded. Those kind of take me out a little bit. But what did you make to the Hawkeye scene in the car? And also, it plays quite well to the very methodical nature of Hawkeye, with knowing that he's found the gun, he's found the knife, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's very methodical in the way he does it.
I think it's basically trying to remind you that Hawkeye possibly knows who Uncle is.
Yeah.
That's what I took away from that, because the big thing that everyone's talking about is obviously that Kingpin might come into this series. I think that's pretty much guaranteed, to be honest. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't. So, it's kind of setting up, isn't it, that I think Hawkeye is aware of Kingpin as a character and is just trying to sort of circumvent Maya by kind of making Kazi more scared of what Uncle will do.
What about this Rolex then? Because it was in the first, I think it was in the first episode, or at least the second episode, they're alluding to it. It was in the Avengers compound. I have no knowledge of anything. I don't know if there's anything that might be touching upon. But it seems like it is the main focus, or one of the main focuses that's going to be in the next two episodes, about whose it is or who they're protecting, that kind of thing. At the moment, I think it's all speculation, but that's what the tracksuit people were actually going to get. That was the very first thing. That's the thing they were actually after. So, again, it's kind of a bit of a MacGuffin, isn't it, really, to like, you've got to get the watch and what's happening with the watch kind of thing. But what do you make to that? Do you think that's linked in with Kingpin or the Uncle or something, maybe? Or
I don't know. I didn't really pick up on the Rolex, to be honest, in the first two episodes. I don't think me and Tony even mentioned it. It didn't stand out to me.
Okay.
No, we just talked about the Ronin suit being stolen, and I didn't quite remember. Yeah, we'd been
They said when they broke through the wall, they were like, we've got to find the watch. So that's what they actually were after originally.
They weren't after anything else.
Yeah.
See. Sometimes things just pass you by. You try to pay attention to these things, but
breakneck speed. venting the first two episodes. Maybe they should have slowed down a bit.
Yeah, definitely. So when the Rolex came in, I was like, oh, okay, maybe I've missed the Rolex. I can't remember hearing about that. But it's basically something that they're after. But it's just a bit of a mystery at the moment, isn't it? About whose watch it is. It came from the Avengers compound. So it must belong to an Avenger, we assume. I mean, the only thing that I saw is it might be Nick Fury's Rolex or something. But I don't know why they'd need that unless it can locate where he is. I mean, I've heard a theory that it might belong to Clint's wife, who does come into this episode. Because she speaks German on the phone, doesn't she, at one point?
She does, yeah. Yeah, when they start talking about it, she changes into German, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of letting you think, oh, okay, maybe there's more to her than we expected. So it would make sense that she was like a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent of some kind. That's where she met Hawkeye, and she kind of retired and to bring up their kids or something. So he's kind of like kept her out of these things. But she's always very supportive of his efforts as an Avenger, isn't she? She's never like the kind of wife who's like, oh, why don't you just quit that job and come and help me with the kids? She's never that kind of character. She's always quite supportive of what he's doing. And now we know she knows a bit of German and things. And so I think possibly it's her watch, but it's not a female-style watch, is it? It's quite a big, chunky man's watch. But I've heard that said as an option, that it might be her watch. I've even heard somebody say that it will be revealed that his wife is Mockingbird. Which is a character that is in the comics, but it's also a character that people who've watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will know about.
Right, okay.
It's the character played by, is it Adriana Padalecki? I was forgetting.
Oh, right, yeah. I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, is it Adriana? It was her character's Mockingbird, or Bobby Morse is her real name. So people were wondering if maybe the MCU are going to bring that character into this and kind of rewrite it a little bit so it's Hawkeye's wife. But I don't know if I agree with that, because to me the Rolex watch seems like a man's watch from the style of it, so I think it's more likely to be Nick Fury's, or maybe, you know, it doesn't have to be something that's connected to a character we know. It could be something brand new, you know, possibly.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't really know. It's the one mystery that they've introduced, isn't it? Beyond the murder mystery, I suppose, of Jack's brother who killed him. So we've now got a second mystery, but who owns the Rolex watch, and why do people want it so badly?
Yeah, it is interesting. As I say, though, those are the two kind of things that happened in those first two episodes, with, as I say, the actual taking of the watch and then the murder. And it's the first time it's been mentioned as Rolex, because in the first couple of episodes it wasn't. It was just the watch. They've moved on from that. But it is interesting that, as you say, with the fact that she's talking in German and she knows about the watch, and also that I think it's quite a good through line that next to the watch is the names of the family. So it's bringing the family in as well. The fact that, you know, that she's been so like distant from the universe as such, but she's always been that supportive character, that you've got this through line now of like Hawkeye, the games of the stakes have changed now, because Maya has got names of his family. So the fact that the stakes have been raised that one step further, and you've got this mystery of the watch. And it goes back to what you were alluding to earlier in the episode about, it seems that there's a lot of like heavy lifting being done here for creating these mysteries, or putting Hawkeye in these dilemmas. But how are they going to get this through in two episodes? Which is like, really, really interesting. So we do see the, and I thought the, going into the, we mentioned about the tactics of the going into the apartment, and how she talks, and it's a lovely scene. It's a lovely scene when she is talking to the old guy, and he's just like, I'll have my bags back, please. Yeah, thanks. And I just love her. I love the way that she's like sort of open mouthed and just like, I'm talking to an Avenger. You know, it's like, yeah. So I thought that was great, and I love those little quips that she does. But I thought it was a nice touch with the alarm sensors as well, with the strobe lighting. I thought that was good, and sort of linking that in. And then we get Maya fighting, and we get some, and Clint says, you know, there's something. Maya's with me, but we can see clearly that she's that actually Kate's actually fighting Maya. So what's going on there? And then we get to this rooftop scene. So very much actiony, very actiony. What do you make to this final scene in the episode? Because obviously we've got the reveal, but you know, the fight scene itself was really good, and there is some really interesting moments in the back end once Kate gets onto the roof with them.
Yeah, I like the moment with the zip wire with yeah. Kate escaping, kind of getting halfway across, then it stopping and needing a little bit of accidental help potentially from Yelena to kind of nudge her further on. That was quite a good moment. I mean, I think we were spoiled with the action in episode 3, to be honest. I didn't find the action in this scene as good as that.
Did you find it quite dark? Because I struggled a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's because a lot of the characters are wearing dark clothes. It got a bit difficult at times to see who exactly is doing what. To be honest, I wasn't massively impressed by the action in terms of the fight choreography and stuff, but it was still entertaining to watch. I did like to see the moment where Kate fell off the roof, obviously, and Hawkeye, in a kind of parallel to what happened in Endgame, where he had Natasha holding on to her off the edge of the cliff, and he didn't want to let her go, but it's kind of the opposite thing with Kate. He had to let her go to save her. Kind of like a reversal there. It was quite a nice little way of linking those two characters really together. That was really good. I mean, it was a bit funny that Kate just basically got up and ran back up the stairs to immediately carry on the fight. So it made me think, oh, okay, that was just like a cute little moment just to nod back to Endgame, and because basically just got back involved in it all. It's a bit strange to fire off a sonic boom arrow, knowing that Maya's deaf. I didn't quite understand the thinking there. I mean, in the first two episodes, we were talking about Yelena and the likelihood that she'd come back into this series.
Well, I'm so glad I didn't listen to that.
Oh, okay.
because I'd watched the episode. I hadn't watched Hawkeye until this week, so I've watched them all in one go, just because of work and things. It's not necessarily that I didn't want to watch it. It's just I haven't had the time. And I knew that I was watching, I was recording this episode. So I was like, right, I need to start watching them. So I haven't listened to any of the previous episodes. So I'm glad I didn't, because Yelena coming in was a bit of a surprise to me. Now, I will say though, the moment when it clicked for me was when we saw the red sparks come out and hit Maya. So as soon as those red sparks went, oh, that's Yelena. And I instantly went, that's Black Widow, to move her off. I'm glad I didn't listen to those bits, but carry on.
Yeah, I think we did flag it as a spoiler or something, but I think if people who've seen Black Widow, I think everyone had speculated that she would come into the Hawkeye series.
Oh yeah, I had as well. I just completely forgot that I actually did
that. Oh, right. Yeah, it's true. But the strange thing is that I thought I'd be spoiled because I'd be aware too much that she was coming back. So I'd instantly think, oh, it's Yelena. But for some strange reason, I don't know why, but I just didn't think it was Yelena at all. I just thought it was some random like person. I don't know really what I was thinking. And when it was revealed, I was like, oh yeah, obviously Yelena. I don't know how I didn't twig it could be her, really. I don't know what happened in my head at that point. But so the surprise weirdly did work for me, even though right. I was totally primed for her character to come back into this. So it was good to see Florence Pugh here. But it is strange, like we keep mentioning, there's only two more episodes left and they've got such a lot now to wrap up. Not only have you got the Maya situation, you've got Yelena's come into it, you've got potentially Kingpin, and you've got Jack and whatever's going on with the tracksuit mafia connection with him, and possibly her mum's a villain. So there's such a lot to kind of get through. So I think it's going to be like an action-packed episode 5 and 6 by the sound of it.
Yeah, definitely. I think the only thing that that I would say is that going back to the scene on the roof where Kate goes over again, the music started to play like the theme for Natasha and Hawkeye on that scene, that they actually started to play it. And I always find it fascinating when they do that. I never really paid that much attention to theme music as such when it comes to TV shows, because I've said many a time that I'm an X-Files fan, and they only started to play with themes in like season 8 and season 9. It tended to be like, you know, more about mood setting, like the mood you're in. Like if you had a werewolf episode or a vampire one, or, you know, you had a mythology, the mythology would be very propulsive and stuff like that. So you'd go on mood. But because of these, you know, these shows, and you've got like, you know, in Endgame, where they made sure they were lit in the same colours as their time, as their stones and stuff like that, that would do. They'd have theme music. You know, Star Trek has started to do that a little bit as well. Maybe has done for a long time, but that I've only started to pick up these things, and it's like it is interesting using them, because subconsciously you do feel that moment when she went over and he went over and looked down. You listened, you heard that music. And it does have that recall. Now, it does help that earlier in the episode, when he's trying to sleep on the chair, that you do see that, as you say, that juxtaposition of them, you know, with the fact that Natasha actually pushed away and needed to be let go, whereas, as you say, it was the other way around for Kate. I thought that was like a nice emotional moment. I think that was, for me, is the through line for this episode, is the Natasha thing, is the, you know, you've got Natasha, then you've got that where he's kind of dealing with that, and then at the end he's having to like let Kate go because he doesn't want to get to that. He doesn't want to lose somebody again, even though he's just kind of starting to have that connection with her. And, you know, even something like as simple as that, going into that doorway at the beginning, you know, there was a bit of camaraderie there. So he did let her go in there. So I find that fascinating. I really do find that interesting, that, you know, that Natasha is the through line, and The show, look, at the end of the day, the show is called Hawkeye, so it's about him, but, you know, it focuses on Kate so much, but at the same time, it's a reflection for him, and I think that's been the good part for me for the show.
Yeah, I just don't know originally when this show was announced, I was viewed it would be like a torch-passing season of television, right, yeah. Where it's just basically a way to get Jeremy Renner out of the MCU, and he'd pass on the Hawkeye mantle to Kate, but I don't think it's going that way, is it? I get a feeling that you know, especially because the success of the show has been the relationship between those two characters. I think it'd be very surprising if they did a season 2 just with Kate. I think you kind of still need those two together, really. So it'd be interesting to see how it ends, really.
I think it's maybe a blend of the two, isn't it? I mean, you don't mention CB1 at the beginning of the episode without kind of alluding to the fact, yeah, we are kind of getting to that torch passing. And, you know, Yelena actually does, when Kate's pointing the arrow, does actually say no, doesn't she? And that has a reflection on the earlier scene when Hawkeye's talking about the fact that he didn't shoot with Natasha. So it's like she's having that moment now, that Kate's had that moment with Yelena. So there's the mirror of those two, which I find good. So overall, though, I mean, I don't think I've got any other notes, unless you have got anything to bring up. But
no, I think that's about it, really. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a good episode. But yeah, it was basically a transitionary episode. Like I said at the start, there, it was just kind of like we got a new thing in play with Yelena. We've got the Rolex thing as a new mystery, and you've kind of got the by the end, you've got the breaking up of the relationship between Clint and Kate. Yeah. So I presume the next episode will be about patching that back up, so that they can both kind of fight whatever needs to be fought in the last episode. But yeah, so I'm interested to see where it goes, and I still think Hawkeye stands a chance of being my favourite MCU. I mean, for me, the WandaVision show was really entertaining, but it was more of a mystery kind of show. I was always kind of kept, you know, I kind of stuck with it week to week more for the mysteries, really. You know, if I had to prioritise why I was watching, it was always driven by the mystery. And every time you had like Quicksilver turn up, it was like another thing that they threw onto the fire of the mystery. You know, it was always something to keep you watching like that. But this is the only one out of all of them, I think, that's really just focused so much on the characters. And I was really enjoying just watching these characters and seeing what they get up to. And so, yeah, hopefully the last two episodes will kind of... just don't throw it all away. Hopefully it stays to this good quality, because I think it's a really good show.
Yeah, it's interesting, because WandaVision, I think overall, yeah, you're right, don't get me wrong, the one thing that really kind of pushed me for WandaVision was the very nature of the show. It something as abstract as what that show is works in my favour. It's definitely the kind of show that I adore Twin Peaks, for example. So things like that really kind of push that, but what kind of the thing that, yes, did it like kind of lose its way towards the end? Probably a little bit, but it's still the idea of the grief aspect and you know, obviously Wanda being Wanda and Elizabeth Olsen's portrayal of grief and things was kept me going in that show. And you know, as I say, Wanda, as everyone knows, is my favorite character, so that's fine. But but in the same way that this season, this show seems to have caught my attention. You know, I wasn't a fan of the Captain America stuff, but this has been like sort of back to that kind of emotional aspect. And I just love the melancholy of as I mentioned before, of Hawkeye. I think that the more times I'll maybe rewatch this, you know, stuff like in you no doubt will have talked about this in the first two episodes with the musical and the way he reacts to that, the way he reacts to like sort of fans coming at him, and he just wants to shut the world out. You know, he's just not that way. I find that kind of melancholy sort of really appealing. Mm. So I think, as I say, that's the reason why I think it's coming up to the, second in my list, really. So what would you want to see in the next two episodes? And I know it's going to be breakneck pace, but what would you want to see for the final two episodes?
I want to see... I'd like to see Kingpin in the next episode. I think it'd be I don't want to have it where it's just like the last scene he turns up and it's like, oh, okay, we've got to wait till season two to get more of him. It'd be really interesting, and I think slightly unexpected if Kingpin does come in next week, a bit earlier than planned. Hopefully Yelena, hopefully that gets resolved. Like I said, they've got such a lot to do in two episodes, but Yelena's quite a young character, so maybe she'll connect with Kate, and through Kate she'll realise that Hawkeye is not such a bad guy. Maybe something will happen with them or something. But also,
I suppose the element of control of Yelena, isn't it? Because she's been missioned. She's been set a mission to get the person that killed Natasha, when that is obviously wrong. But, you know, and again, it's kind of like, it's where Clint was, wasn't it? The fact that Yelena's been sent this mission, that's something that Clint would have done. Mm. It's how you resolve that, which would be interesting.
I'm wondering as well if Julia Louis-Dreyfus will turn up as well as Valentina Allegra De Fontaine. I've been practicing that name.
I can tell.
Hopefully she'll appear, possibly, you know, because she's recruiting her kind of anti-Avengers group, isn't she? Maybe she's going to recruit Maya. Is that going to happen? Maya Lopez, is she somebody that would be recruited? I don't know. She has got her own spin-off show. So yeah. I don't know what they'll be setting up exactly with that, but maybe that could happen. But yeah, I mean, they've got such a lot to do, haven't they? What the Rolex watch is all about, and I don't know. Will Hawkeye's wife come into the story properly? Or will she always be just on the phone because Linda Cardellini is doing other things? I don't know if she's going to come into it more strongly. I don't know. But I don't know. There's a lot in there, a lot to speculate on. But
For me, it's will Clint get home for Christmas?
Oh, yeah. That's at the heart of the matter, isn't it?
That's so, it needs to be there for Christmas Day.
Yeah. I'm just disappointed that apparently this is the least successful Disney Plus show from the MCU.
Is it?
Apparently, yeah. Obviously, all these streamers are very cagey about releasing ratings and stuff. But I think the word on the street is that this is actually the least popular one that they've come out with, which I think is really terrible because it's probably one of the best ones. Like we're saying, it's. I think it just boils down to connection to the character of Hawkeye. I mean, people who are like big MCU fans are willing to give it a go. Even if they don't particularly like Hawkeye, they'll give it a go and be pleasantly surprised. Whereas just more casual people will just be like, "Oh, Hawkeye? Okay. I'm not interested in that. You know, Loki, fine. WandaVision, yeah. You know, Falcon and Winter Soldier, yeah, I know them, but you know, Hawkeye."
That for me is intriguing because obviously Phase 4 has been moved around, hasn't it? So WandaVision wasn't originally going to be the first show. And I think it's worked better that way around because WandaVision's, again, such an abstract, weird show. The people were, there was a bit of like, all right, okay, I'll give it a go. What is this about? In general audience, it kind of had that little moment of like, what is this? What are we watching here? And then you get back to Captain America, which was very kind of standard, Marvel stuff, which, you know, I personally didn't like, but that's just my opinion on that.
No,
but then going back to like, I'm glad that you agree. I still haven't watched the last three episodes. I got three episodes in and I didn't like it. So then What If, obviously, comes in and Loki. So, I mean, Loki's will naturally have a fan base. That's probably kept it, it's almost like a wave of stuff, isn't it, really? Because I know people that haven't watched What If because they're not interested. I don't think I would have watched What If had it not been for the podcast, personally. You know, I was willing to give it a go, but if it was in a list of like maybe 10 TV shows I wanted to watch, you know, just in general, and I was just casually watching them, I don't think What If would be there. I know Star Trek's having this at the moment where people are saying, oh, it's another universe-shattering event. You know, we're going to have to do this again. And this isn't. This is very kind of grounded. It's about mafia, people on the streets. You know, it might develop into something, but it's very much grounded. And I like that. Mm. I think it's a really good option. But if it's not hitting audiences, that's really interesting.
Yeah. And also it's taken directly from comics. And if you ever look back on the MCU, pretty much all the best films they do are always the ones that closely follow existing material, and they just kind of tweak things around a little bit as they need to. Like obviously, Thanos was the Infinity Saga thing, and they did a lot of their own stuff there, but it was pulling a lot from the comics and stuff. And
yeah,
so I think out of all the shows that there's been, Hawkeye obviously is taking directly from a comic, so I think it just works better when they've got that kind of bedrock of material that's proven, you know, it's been a successful comic book, so it will easily adapt to a TV show, and they just kind of change elements here and there so that people who read the comics are not bored, and it just kind of works. So I think that's the strength of this, and just the focus on the characters and the actors being really well cast. And
okay then, well, I think we've talked enough about this episode, so thank you, Dan, for coming back in on short notice and joining me. I think I was originally meant to be a guest, so I've jumped into the hosting chair, so it's all good. But yeah, if people are wanting to hear more about you, what are you up to and where can people find you online?
I tend to pop up on this podcast fairly frequently. I'm also on the Real Talk podcast on the same network, so check me out there. But mainly I'm on my own website, which I run. So it's framerated.co.uk. So click over there and have a look, have a read. I'm also on Twitter, so you can check me out there, DanOwen79. But yeah, that's me.
Excellent. You can find me on Twitter at R Muldrake. That's R-M-U-L-D-R-A-K-E. You can find me on the XCast. We're currently just finished, as of time of recording this week, our season 7 coverage of the X-Files. And so we're having a bit of a hiatus. We'll be talking and in the background about sorting out season 8. I've also recently been doing a couple of episodes on The Time Is Now, the Millennium podcast, which was a show starring Lance Henriksen between 1996 and 1999. And I think there's going to be a special interview that we did as a joint XCast and Time Is Now podcast thing that we did in Birmingham recently, where we talked to writer Glenn Morgan. So that will be airing soon, I believe. I think it might be a Patreon-only exclusive, potentially. I'm not too sure about that. You can also find me on the Shipwrecked and Comatose podcast, which is a Red Dwarf podcast. That is currently going through some specials. Unfortunately, I'm not on those ones, but in the new year, we'll be heading into Series 6 of Red Dwarf, so you can find that at Red Dwarf Pod. Thanks for joining us on this episode. Like Kate Bishop, I'm going to go off piece. There's a script somewhere, but I'm just going to say there will be other We Made This Podcast Network shows trailered at the end of this episode, so please stay tuned for that. And please subscribe to us on whichever podcast finder you find us on. And if you can, give us a rating. That would be fantastic. It really does help with us. We're building a great community in the podcast 616 network with plenty of podcasting hosts and guests. And we want to get out to as many people as possible. So please feel free to leave a review. That'd be fantastic. And of course, we are also on Patreon, so please consider helping us out there as well. And that you can find that at patreon.com/WeMadeThis. So that's us for this episode. So until next time, remember to try and keep hitting that bullseye.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Rarely Going, an animated Star Trek podcast.
I wonder if we're far enough into this to really figure this out yet. But it feels like with animation, you almost have a little bit more of a license to reflect and look back than maybe they feel they can do. Although, you know, I mean, Picard is obviously very nostalgic, but
stylistically, it's very different, though. Yeah. It's not your father's Picard, yeah. Even though it is the same actor.
The TARDIS crew.
Donald Sumpter is amazing. He's good. I love the fact that he just pops up. He just pops up, probably Rassilon. Probably.
Well, they do confirm later on he is.
I think they do.
Yeah,
don't
he says on Rassilon the Redeemer.
Of course he does. Bloody hell!
And he has the gauntlet as well, which gives the hint at that.
Yeah.
I'm nodding profusely.
Very proper classic Doctor Who as well. Love it as well. Yes. The lore.
Chucky Vision.
Well, everyone wanted it, but I still wasn't sure truly whether or not Devon was gay, or, well, he might also be bi, but interested in Jake in a romantic way, at least. And, my heart. It was physical, Dev. I was like, oh, and then I cried. Did I mention I cried? I'm not even remotely embarrassed about the fact that I cried twice.
It was very special.
You didn't cry, did you?
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.